This is a Puritan and Reformed audiobook podcast. The following is from A Puritan's Commentary on the Book of Ezekiel, William Greenhill, chapter 9, verse 4. And the Lord said unto him, Go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the foreheads of the men that sigh and that cry for all the abominations that are done in the midst. In this verse, divine pleasure is made known to him who had the inkhorn by his side, and it consists in a double command. First, he is commanded to go through the midst of the city and find out who sighed and cried for the abominations in it. Number two, he must set a mark upon the foreheads of them who sighed and cried. Set a mark. This sign was no corporal sign, as if the Lord had made some impression on their foreheads in which to distinguish them from others. For this was a vision not to be taken really, but in a spiritual sense. The Lord Christ took special notice of these and did distinguish them by special providence from those who were to perish in the destruction of the city. He did not go up and down from house to house. Instead of marking their foreheads, he applied his blood and merits and sealed them by his Spirit. Not that they were not washed in the blood of Christ before, but now there was a new and special evidence of it. Upon their foreheads, not on their backs, breasts, arms, but on their foreheads. Some think the prophet alludes to a practice of marking servants in the forehead, who had their master's names fixed therein. And it is the use amongst us to brand some delinquents with a T in the shoulder, hand, or forehead. And as before was said, judges marked those who were questioned and to be freed with tau. Here was nothing written upon their foreheads, but something is held out by these words to us. Christ having intimated their election, effectual calling, justification by his blood, intercession for them, providential care over them, and the dreadful judgments coming upon them, does by this phrase declare his public owning and caring for them. The forehead is an open place exposed to view of all, and whatever is there is visible. Revelation 13, verse 16. The mark of the beast was in the hand and forehead. One was secret, more private, the other more open. Christ would so deal by these persons and so deliver them that it should openly appear he had distinguished them from others. Upon their foreheads is specified to let us see here was a personal, not a family deliverance intended. Question, were all delivered who were marked? Answer, it is believed that some godly ones suffered by the sword and famine, that some also were carried away captive. Jeremiah himself was not free from sufferings. Question, for what end were they then marked? Answer, to secure them of their eternal condition, that their sins were pardoned and persons accepted. Number two, to assure them that he was with them, and would work all things for their good and increase of their glory. Number three, to encourage their hearts against all opposition and hardship whatsoever. The men that sigh. The word notes sighing for grief of mind. Grief is a heavy burden and causes men to sigh as those that are burdened. Exodus 2:23. The children of Israel sighed by reason of bondage. The heavy bondage they were under made them groan and sigh. And so these here had the burden of Jerusalem's abominations upon them, and that made them sigh. Proverbs 29:2. When the wicked bears rule, the people mourn. It is the same word. They meet with heavy pressures which make them sigh. That cry. This note such sorrow as exceeds sighing and must vent itself in a more full way, namely with crying vehemently, as wounded men used to do when they breathe out their souls. Ezekiel 26, verse 15. The wounded cry when the slaughter is made. In Jeremiah 51:52. Through all the land the wounded shall groan or cry. It is the same word, so that the meaning is, they sighed greatly and cried out bitterly for the abominations which were in Jerusalem. Observation 1. The Lord looks upon the world with a discriminating eye. Some he looks upon to be marked and some to be left unmarked. All are not equal in God's thoughts or eye. Some from eternity he predestinated, some he passed over, and now in time some he sees for salvation, some he sets by for perdition. His eye distinguishes between the precious and the vile. Psalm 34:15-16. The eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, and the face of the Lord is against them that do evil. He beholds both, but with a different aspect. One sort he beholds to do good to, the other to cut off. Psalm 11:4. His eyelids try the children of men. He looks fixedly upon them, and as they are, so he deals with them. Job 36:7. It is said, he withdraws not his eyes from the righteous. They are the delight of his eyes, but the wicked are thorns, provocations to his eyes. Isaiah 3:8. Observation 2. When the Lord proceeds to judgment of cities, churches, people, kingdoms, he does it judiciously, considerately. He does not pour out wrath from heaven at all adventures, let it light where and upon whom it will, but he makes inquiry who are fit to be punished and who are to be spared. Psalm 9:7. The Lord has prepared his throne for judgment. And then verse 8. He shall judge the world in righteousness. And verse 12. He makes inquisition for blood. The oppressed he will relieve. The oppressors he will cut off. When judgments are abroad, especially wars, all things seem to move confusedly, and wicked men to do what they list. They will destroy all before them, but they cannot. The judgments are the Lord's, and he carries them on judiciously. There are eyes in the wheels and a divine spirit in them. If they do not move, they cannot move, and otherwise, then the wise God will have them. Observation 3. In the worst times, God has some who are faithful and serve him. Violence had filled the land. The idol of jealousy was set at the altar gate, chambers of imagery in the walls of the temple. The ancients of Israel worshipped the forms of creeping things and abominable beasts. The woman wept for that shameful idol Tammuz. Corruptions abounded in church and state. Yet some faithful ones the Lord had that were undefiled. The church of God did never totally fail, nor ever shall. When all flesh had corrupted its way, the wickedness of man was grown great, when the earth was filled with violence. Genesis 6:5, 11, and 12. Yet then, even then, was Noah untainted. He was just and perfect in his generations and walked with God. Verse 9. In Ahab's days, when Jezebel cut off the prophets of the Lord and he vexed the righteous with his will worship and abominable idolatries and forced them to flee to Jerusalem, and things were so extremely ill, the righteous so wasted, that Elijah, a prophet, thought there was none left in Israel but himself. Even then the Lord tells them there were 7,000 which had not bowed their knees to Baal, nor kissed him. 1 Kings 19:18. They have showed that false god no reverence, contracted no pollution by doing his arrest, did. When Ahaz, who is stigmatized for his wickedness, 2 Chronicles 28:22, when he reigned, cut in pieces the vessels of the temple, and shut up the doors of the temple, and made altars in every corner of Jerusalem, verse 24. Yet his own son Hezekiah was godly at that time and hated the ways of his father. When Christ came, there was a Joseph and Mary, a Zacharias and Elizabeth, a Simeon and Anna, with some few others, and the times were exceeding bad then. Observation 4. The number of men to be saved in Jerusalem is few. commission is given to the man with the ink horn by his side to go and search through Jerusalem, and where he found any mourning, sighing, to mark them. And surely this number was very few. He is not to mark streets, families, but particular persons, which know supposity of those that were truly godly and to be saved. In Egypt the blood was upon the lintel and side posts of the door, and so whole families there escaped. But here in Jerusalem the mark is not upon the door, but the forehead. Many doors whose families were passed over, here and there one found and marked. Take a place or two to this purpose, Jeremiah 5:1. Run ye to and fro through the streets of Jerusalem, and see now and know, and seek in the broad places of it, if you can find a man. If there be any that executes judgment, that seeks the truth, and I will pardon it. Here God bids him search and see if they could find a man and bring forth, so that the city might be spared, but they could not find one. This satisfied not God. They might be careless in that work, overlook some man that did it. God, therefore, will search himself. Ezekiel 22:30. I sought for a man among them that should make up the hedge and stand in the gap before me for the land, that I should not destroy it. But I found none. Neither man nor God could find any. These expressions show that the number of the godly were very few, that those who were so durst not appear in public, because the times were so profane and perilous, but they hid themselves and mourned in secret. Few is the number of true believers and true mourners. There were two prophets, Jeremiah and Uriah, the Rechabites, Baruch the scribe, Abed-Melech the Ethiopian, with some few beside. The thought of the scant number of the good ones made sad the heart of the prophet Micah in chapter 7:1. Woe is me, for I am as when they have gathered the summer fruits, as the grape gleanings of the vintage. There is no cluster to eat. Observation 5. The Lord has a special care of his saints when dreadful and destroying judgments are coming upon others. Go set a mark upon them that sigh, and so on. Provide that they be secured. Distinguish them from all the rest, and let them have mercy in the common calamity. It appears first from the person employed to do it, and that is the Lord Christ, who is a man with the inkhorn by his side. When God shall employ not a prophet, not an angel, but his own dear Son to do this work, to mark the godly, it is an argument of tender care towards them. Secondly, he must go through the midst of the city and look into every place, make an exact search, and find them out wherever they are hid. God would not have him neglect any place, lest he should pass by any saint. Matthew 2:8, Herod would have the wise men make diligent search for the young child, and God would have Christ here make diligent search for mourning saints. They are his treasure, and Christ would search for them as for hid treasure. Number 3, he must surely mark them. You shall sign them with a sign. That is, certainly sign them. The doubling of the word in the original notes God's intention and care to have it done. It might have sufficed to have said, you shall sign them, but he adds, with a sign, to put it out of doubt. And number 4, from the person sealed, they were men. It is put indefinitely, not confined to noble, wise, rich, learned, but any condition of men that were godly, any poor man, any servant, any child, any little one. Let their grace be never so mean. If they had any grace at all, they should have the scale as well as the best. But they were also mourners, when filled with sorrow for the sins of the land, with fears for the judgments which were coming upon the land, all in a confusion, everyone at a loss, not knowing what to do, which way to turn themselves, liberties, ordinances, city, sanctuary, all comforts, all friends, being upon departure, now to be marked out for life eternal, now to have the conscience sprinkled with the blood of Christ, the Spirit to bear witness and seal up the soul with assurance of God's love, this shows God has a great care of his people in time of danger. Not only at this time, but in all times of judgments, God has been careful of his people. Lot's righteous soul was vexed at the unclean conversation of the Sodomites. And when fire and brimstone scorched and consumed Sodom, God sent his angels to find, hasten, and force Lot out of that wicked place. Genesis 19. The flood that drowned all the world could not hurt Noah. God put him into the ark, shut him in, and kept him safe there. Genesis 7. When the destroying angel comes forth to destroy the firstborn of Egypt, the Israelites' posts were sprinkled with blood. Exodus 12:22, and no blood must be shed there. They were marked for deliverance. When Jericho was taken and destroyed, the scarlet thread in the window was a sign of deliverance to Rahab and her house. Joshua 2:18, Joshua 6:23, Revelation 7:2-5. Christ, the angel of the east, who had the seal of the living God, namely the Spirit, forbids the angels to hurt any till the 144,000 were sealed in their foreheads. When Paul was brought before Nero, and all left him in the jaws of that roaring lion, the Lord stood by him and strengthened him. The more careless others were of Paul, the more careful was God of him. A little before Jerusalem was taken by the Romans, a voice was heard, Ite Pelum, the faithful. No sinner escaped there, but the city was ruined and all the foretold woes accomplished in it. Observation 6. It is the Lord Christ who is a marker of the saints. All power in heaven and earth is given to him, sealing and saving power as well as rejecting and destroying power. He is said to have the seal of the living God, Revelation 7, and to take order for the sealing the servants of the Lord, Revelation 3:12. Him that overcomes will I make a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go no more out. And I will write upon him the name of my God, and the name of the city of my God, which is New Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven from my God, and I will write upon him my new name. Christ makes him a pillar in the temple. That is great honor. But that is not all. Christ writes three names upon that name, the name of his God, of New Jerusalem, and his own name. He causes him to know he is the Son of God, a citizen of the heavenly city, and should have interest in the glory and dignity of Christ, which theologians call the new name given him after his passion and ascension. Such marking have the saints and faithful servants of Christ. The scripture tells us of another marker besides Christ, and it is a beast mentioned in Revelation 13. Verses 16 and 17, who causes all to receive a mark in their right hand and forehead. Christ has sealed his, Revelation 7, to separate them from the world in danger, and the beast seals his to separate them from Christ's sealed ones, and for the world that they might buy and sell. This sealing was not for deliverance, but for destruction, Revelation 14, 9 and 10. If any man receive the beast's mark in his hand or forehead, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, and be tormented with fire and brimstone. Here was a dangerous mark, whether it was a mass, sign of the cross, profession of popish worship, subjection to the Pope as head of the church, obedience to his canons and decrees, observation of his fasts, days, and rites, whether ocular confession, popish orders, or any vows or oaths to maintain the Pope in his power, such as Otho took in the year 960. Observation 7. God and Christ are not ashamed of theirs in the worst times and greatest dangers. God will have them marked, and Christ marks them in the forehead. In Sodom, God owned Lot. In Rome, he stood by Paul, 2 Timothy 4:17. When four destroying angels were come abroad, the Lord Christ seals 12,000 of every tribe in their foreheads. Revelation 7:3-5-8. Christ owns his people here and hereafter. See John 10:3. 14 and 27. He calls them his sheep, his friends. Chapter 15, 15. His brethren, I ascend unto my Father and your fathers, to my God and your God. John 20, 17. When Christ was in heaven, he owned Stephen being amidst his enemies, Acts 7, 55 and 56. And he promises, Matthew 10, 32, to confess and own the man before his Father in heaven, who shall confess and own him here on earth. It is a great privilege to be owned by the Lord, Hebrews 11, 16. God is not ashamed to be called their God, notwithstanding all the saints' sins and infirmities. God is not ashamed of them. When they were in Egypt, God owned them, Exodus 3, 6 and 7. He tells Moses he was the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and that he had surely seen the affliction of his people. Let us not be ashamed of God and his cause, but openly and truly profess him in ways. We shall lose nothing by it, 1 Samuel 2, 30. Them that honor me I will honor, and they that despise me shall be lightly esteemed. If we have shame with men and honor with God, vilified on earth and be accepted in heaven, we have no cause to be discouraged. It is likely the godly here were reproached, threatened, hardly used. But because they honor God, God owned them. And whoever honored God and was not honored by him? The three children would not obey Nebuchadnezzar's command nor worship his image, Daniel 3, but honor the God of Israel. Trust in him for help. Rather die in his cause than dishonor him at all. And did not the Lord honor them with his presence, with safety and deliverance? When Peter and John were bold in the cause of Christ and would preach the truth notwithstanding the command of rulers to the contrary, presently after God honored them miraculously, shaking the house and filling them all with the Holy Ghost, Acts 3, 18-20. And if you ask how you shall honor God, it is answered by purging yourselves from the corruptions of the times, 2 Timothy 2:21. If a man purge himself, he shall be a vessel unto honor, and by standing for the truths of the times. Observation 8. Another observation is that the faithful are so far from complying with the wickedness of the times that they sigh and cry for the abominations of it. First, they don't comply. Wickedness is powerful and has its arguments of pleasure, profit, countenance to draw good men to side with her. But they are things intractable. How can I do this wickedness and sin against God? Genesis 39:9. David would not sit with the wicked. He hated the congregation of evildoers, Psalm 26:5. And see what he resolved upon in Psalm 101:4-8. He would rather cut them off than countenance them. Grace is as strong in the saints as corruption is in the wicked. The vigor of faith, 1 John 5:4. The power of the Spirit, chapter 4:4. And the efficacy of Christ's prayer in John 17:15-20. Do keep the servants of God from complying with the wicked. When all flesh had corrupted its ways, yet Noah was uncorrupt. Genesis 6:9. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations. Ahab could not get Micaiah to comply with the court and suit with the humor of the times. The godly are like fish in salt waters. They grow not brackish. They lose not of their sweetness. Zacharias and Elizabeth and the great corruptions at Christ's coming and the great scarcity of good men, yet they walked in all the commandments of the Lord blameless, not in the commands of the high priests and Pharisees. God has spoken to the righteous with a strong hand and instructed them that they should not walk in the ways of the wicked. Isaiah 8, verse 11. Here the godly did not bow to the image of jealousy, join with the 70 elders in offering incense. They wept not for Tammuz, they put not the branch to their nose. Number 2. They sigh and cry for the abominations which are in their times. They bewail the sins of others. Psalm 119, verse 53. Whore has taken hold upon me because of the wicked that forsake thy law. Verse 158. I beheld the transgressors and was grieved because they kept not thy word. Lot in 2 Peter 2, verse 7. was vexed with the filthy conversation of the Sodomites. Yea, vexed from day to day, what he saw and heard was a continual vexation to him. The Lord Christ, when they honored him with their garments cast in the way, when they acknowledged him king and magnified him, in Luke 19:36-38, even then he weeps over Jerusalem for her impenitency. Other sins and the judgments of God coming upon her, verse 41. The two witnesses, Revelation 11:3, prophesy in sackcloth, which was the habit of mourners. Mordecai, Daniel, the Ninevites, and others, when they mourned, wore sackcloth. So did these witnesses, bewailing the abominations and tyranny of Antichrist, the desolations of the church and delusions of the people. 2 Corinthians 11:21. When I come again, I fear my God will humble me among you, and that I shall bewail many which have sinned already and have not repented of the uncleanness and fornication and lasciviousness which they have committed. This morning is, first, a hearty, real sigh. They groan. It is not a light manner. The abominations were weighty and pressing upon their spirits. In 2 Peter 2:7, the word there means to be oppressed under to the conversation of the ungodly and wantonness. The ungodly's wanton, wicked conversation is an oppressing evil to the godly and afflicts their hearts, as the Egyptians afflicted the Israelites, Acts 7:24. Moses avenged the oppressed. Lot's soul was vexed, verse 8. He tormented, racked his soul, a metaphor taken from engines they did torment with. His soul was troubled as a man upon the rack, Jeremiah 4:19. My bowels, my bowels. I am pained at my very heart. What was the manner? There was the sound of the trumpet, the alarm of war. Number 2. As it was cordial, so it was constant and great grief. They sighed and cried. A little would not work. It continued. Jeremiah 9. Oh, that my head were waters and mine eyes a fountain of tears, that I might weep day and night. The prophet wished himself turned into waters, into a fountain, that weeping day and night he might with a flood of tears carry down the floods of iniquity which he saw. So Ezra 9:3, when he saw the holy seed matched with strangers, the princes and rulers to be chief in the trespasses, he rent his garments, plucked off the hair of his head and beard, and sat down astonished. His grief was such as made him astonished. Number 3. It is inward and outward. They sigh, they cry. There are expressions of their grief. It was not hidden but evident. They declared how their souls were oppressed, how they were filled with grief and could not forbear. Christ wept over Jerusalem. Micah, when he considered the sins of Samaria and Jerusalem with the heavy judgments which were coming, in chapter 1:8 says, I will wail and howl, I will go stripped and naked, as if sorrow had bereft him of his wits. I will make a wailing like the dragons and mourning as the owls. And St. Tius, what they say of the dragons and owls mourning, great mourning with outward expressions are set out thereby, Job 30:29. I am a brother to dragons and a companion to owls or ostriches. And 4, it was universal, not for some few or great abominations, but for all the abominations, church, state, city, family abominations. They laid all to heart and left none bewailed. Inquiry number 1, why do the godly sigh and cry? First, God is dishonored by the sins of others as well as by our own, and the godly are grieved when God is dishonored by any. Psalm 119:136, rivers of water run down mine eyes because they keep not thy law. David's afflictions drew not so many tears from him as the sins of others, not his banishment by his son as the breach of God's law by the wicked. Nothing went so to his heart as the dishonor of God, whose glory shining in his word and ordinances is dearer to the godly than their lies. Elijah desired to die when he saw God so dishonored by Ahab and Jezebel. The eye is for two things, for sight and tears. If we see God dishonored, presently our eyes should be filled with tears. Number two, if we mourn not for the sins of others, we draw them upon us, we make them ours. They mourn here for all their abominations, lest they should be found guilty of any. In 1 Corinthians 5, the Corinthians were defiled with the sin of the incestuous person, because they did not mourn and do their duty to affect his heart or remove him from their body. Bradford prayed the Lord to forgive him his other men's sins. Number 3. It is an argument we mourn for sin as sin when we mourn for it in others. Sin is a breach of the law anywhere, and if I grieve, sigh, cry for it in myself and not in others, it is some selfish respect, not the nature of sin, which causes that mourning. He who hates poison as poison hates it everywhere, in whose hand soever it be. And he who mourns for sin as sin would neither himself nor have others violate the law of God. Number 4, the sins of others are of a destroying nature as well as our own. They may destroy armies, states, churches, councils. Ecclesiastes 9:18, one sinner destroys much good. One Achan, one murderer may undo a land. He defiles it, brings perils upon it. God appointed a special sacrifice to expiate murder, Deuteronomy 21. And no satisfaction was to be taken for a murderer's life, Numbers 35:31. Saul slays the Gibeonites unjustly, and the 3 years' famine is upon David and his people, 2 Samuel 21:1-3. The death of the Levite's concubine and Benjamin's refusal to deliver up the delinquents to justice caused a bloody war and the death of above 65,000 men. 5. It argues strength of grace to mourn for others' sins. Censoring and reproaching of others for their sins argues strength of corruption, and mourning for them argues strength of grace, a sound spiritual constitution. Such a one was in Christ. He prayed for the hardness of others' hearts, Mark 3:5. Number 6. They who mourn for abominations do great service for the places where they live. They stand in the gap. They keep off God's judgments. When the people had sinned in making a calf, and God's judgments were breaking in upon them, did not Moses mourn, weep, pray before the Lord, and keep off the sad things that were hastening towards him? He said that he would destroy them had not Moses, his chosen, stood before him in the breach to turn away his wrath, lest he should destroy them. The mourner's tears oft quench the fire of God's wrath, divert judgments, if not but destruction comes as here, yet the mourners have this testimony in their breast, that they drew not down the vengeance on the church or state. Number 7, they are blessed that mourn, Matthew 5:4. These here were marked, had testimonies of God's good will towards them. Jeremiah was a mourner, chapter 9:1 and chapter 15:11. God says there, I will cause the enemy to entreat you well in a time of evil. Here was a blessing promised, and the faithful God could not but perform it. When the earth is watered by the heavens, it is blessed, but when the earth waters the heavens, when we put tears into the Lord's bottle, when we mourn and weep for the abominations of the earth, there is a greater blessing. Psalm 12:5. For the sighing of the needy I will arise and set, and so on. Number 8, others mourn for the sins of men that are not men. Because of swearing, the land mourns, Jeremiah 23:10. The whole creation groans and travails in pain, Romans 8:22. Inquiry, number 2, for what should we mourn? Number 1, for effusion of so much blood in the kingdom and spoiling so many towns. When Ziklag was burned, it is said, David and those with him wept till they had no more power to weep. 1 Samuel 30:4. What would David do if he were now alive and amongst us to see countries and kingdoms consumed with civil wars? Isaiah 22:4-5. Look away from me. I will weep bitterly. Labor not to comfort me because of the spoiling of the daughter of my people. For it is a day of trouble and of treading down and of perplexity by the Lord God of hosts in the valley of vision, breaking down the walls, and of crying to the mountains, Jeremiah 31:15. A voice was heard in Ramah, lamentation and bitter weeping, Rachel weeping for her children, refused to be comforted because they were not. Rachel was buried in Bethlehem, Genesis 35:19, and Ramah was not far from it. She is put for the Bethlehemitical woman who wept bitterly for their children, who were slain and carried that way into captivity. And should not England weep because thousands of her children are not? Many precious ones are gone. The sword has drunk their blood. If Martha and Mary wept for one Lazarus, a friend of Christ, why should not all our Marthas and Marys weep when so many Lazaruses, so many friends of Christ, have been cut off? Isaiah 57:1, the righteous perish, and no man lays it to heart. Number two, that justice takes not place, but rather injustice and oppression. Isaiah 59:11, we roar all like bears and mourn sore like doves. We look for judgment, but there is none. In verses 14 and 15, justice stands afar off. Equity cannot enter. He that departs from evil makes himself a prey, and the Lord saw it, and it displeased him that there was no judgment. The oppressed cry. Number three, for the sinful, selfish policy which has been in the great businesses of the kingdom which are to carry on reformation. They carted the ark when their own shoulders should have carried it. Their prudence in the things of God made way for Uzzah's sin and suffering and hindered the progress of the work. There has been too much of man seen in our undertakings. Oh, the policy, falsehood, treachery that has been among us. What was it that made Jeremiah weep and mourn so, chapter 9:1-2? It was because they were adulterers and an assembly of treacherous men. Number four, for the great and bitter divisions which are among us, not only among those who are wicked or indifferent, but even among those who are godly. They shoot their arrows one at another, even bitter words and bitter actions. Is it not sad when Christ's disciples and apostles fall out? Matthew 20:24. The 10 were moved with indignation against the two brethren. It troubled Christ to see such variance between them, and had he not wisely and speedily taken up the matter, the issue might have been very ill. When brethren wrong one another, it will affect a Moses, Acts 7:26. Is it not to be lamented when our fountains run salt water, when brethren speak evil one of another, and so speak evil of the law and gospel also? Galatians 5:15. It troubled Paul's spirit to see such biting and devouring of one another. Certainly, if we should see two or three dogs biting of a man, it would much work upon us, and men biting men, and not be affected with it. To see men destroyed with the spirit of bitterness, when they should be restored with the spirit of meekness, is mourning to some, however it may be music to others. Number six, that God's judgments have been so long upon us and done us so little good. God has given us much medicine, and it does not work. We may be a dying people as those Jews were in Ezra 10:9. It is said there that all the people sat in the street of the house of God trembling, because some were carried away captive, and for the great rain, the great showers which beat down their fruit and corn. We have had many taken prisoners, carried away captive, used barbarously. We have had great rains of blood, and have we yet trembled? Have we learned righteousness and beheld the majesty of the Lord? Isaiah 26:9-10. May it not be said as it is, Jeremiah 5:3, thou hast stricken them, but they have not grieved. Thou hast consumed them, but they have refused to receive correction. They have made their faces harder than a rock. Number six, that so many thousands have perished in their sins, and multitudes are in a perishing way. Romans 9:2. I have great heaviness and continual sorrow in my heart, for I could wish myself separated from Christ for my brethren, my kinsmen, according to the flesh. He feared they would perish eternally, and therefore mourn continually. Gratensis tells us of a woman that was so affected with souls' miscarriings that she besought God to stop up the passage into hell with her soul and body, that none might have entrance. Do not people perish for want of vision, and few lay it to heart? Number seven, that God's name suffers so much amongst us. God's name should be dear to us. The scripture tells us it is glorious and fearful, Deuteronomy 28:58. Great and terrible, Psalm 119:3. Holy and reverend, Psalm 111:9. honorable, and that this name of God should suffer by sinful wretched men is manner of sighing and crying. Some despise his name, Malachi 1:6. Some profane his name, Leviticus 21:6. Some blaspheme his name, Isaiah 52:5. And most darken the glory of his name, and as it was to Joshua a great grief, bitter affliction, when his name suffered, Joshua 7:9, so it should be to us. William Greenhill, a commentary on Ezekiel 9, verse 4. This is a Puritan and Reformed audiobook podcast. www.puritanaudiobooks.net